Coming up, will churches lose their tax-exempt status if their pastors endorse political candidates? Maybe not.
We believe that there should be no governmental intrusion in the pulpit at all.
Also, Vietnamese Catholic priests and seminarians grateful to be safe and free in Carthage, Missouri.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. The Jane Henson Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. As protests against an anti-Islam film spread to more than 20 countries in the Muslim world this week, several high-ranking Muslim leaders issued strong calls for peace. The Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia condemned last week's deadly attacks on the U.S. consulate in Libya as un-Islamic, but he also said speech defaming the Prophet Muhammad should be outlawed. Here in the U.S., the Coptic Bishop of Los Angeles joined leading Muslim representatives in denouncing the film and the violent response. They said Copts and Muslims must stand together against extremists in either religion. And in an effort to reach Muslim protesters abroad, U.S. Muslim groups released videos in Arabic and Urdu appealing for calm and restraint. In other news, on Capitol Hill, Senator Dick Durbin convened a hearing on hate crimes in response to the mass shooting last month at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin. Among those who testified was a young Sikh man whose mother was killed in the attack. He urged the government to begin tracking hate crimes against Sikhs as it does for other religions.
An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us.
Meanwhile, in Ohio, 16 Amish men and women, part of a breakaway group, were found guilty of hate crimes for cutting the hair and beards of members of their former community. The actions were considered a hate crime because hair holds religious significance for the Amish. In Rome this week, a Harvard professor released new research she says indicates some early Christians believed Jesus could have been married. Professor Karen King's analysis centers around a newly unveiled 4th century scrap of papyrus with the words, "Jesus said to them, 'My wife.'" King does not conclude Jesus was married, but says her finding shows some people might have thought he was. Some scholars questioned the document's authenticity. Others said it seemed valid to them. Both presidential candidates this week issued direct video appeals to faith-based voters. President Obama's video came with the launch of a new campaign project called People of Faith for Obama.
I'm asking for your support because we have more work to do to build an economy where families are valued and secure, and expand opportunity, extend compassion, and pursue the common good.
Meanwhile, Governor Romney's campaign released a video that was played for religious conservatives at the Values Voter Summit in Washington last weekend.
All we ask is that between now and November 6th, you join us and commit like never before. This election can come down to just one more vote. I ask you to find that one vote. Ask one more person to join our campaign.
Our managing editor, Kim Lawton, has been covering the campaigns. Kim, what do we know so far from the polls about how faith-based people are dividing?
Well, of course, it's just a snapshot for right now, but there were some new numbers this week that suggested that evangelicals, that all-important group for Republicans, do seem to be supporting Mitt Romney at around the same levels they supported John McCain, which is very high. So that's good news for Governor Romney. Catholics seem to be more divided as they were last time around, although some new numbers this week suggest that they are leaning more toward Obama as they did in the last election. I was surprised to see this week numbers suggesting that mainline Protestants who went principally for John McCain last time around, or slightly more for John McCain, more of them are leaning toward Obama this time around.
Hmm. And is there anything at all in the data to suggest that Romney's religion is making any difference?
Well, in these snapshots that we have right now, it doesn't appear to be the case. Some people had wondered if evangelicals would not be supporting him because he's a Mormon, and some evangelicals are concerned about that, had raised concerns about voting for a Mormon candidate. Doesn't appear to be that way. However, people have to get to the polls for it to actually matter. You know, turnout is what counts. Mm-hmm. I was surprised in the video this week that Mitt Romney released, he never once mentioned his Mormon faith. And some people had suggested that he might be talking about it more. He didn't this week.
Mm-hmm. Not talking about it, perhaps, because it is a matter of concern for a lot of evangelical Protestants.
Well, that's what some people are wondering, if he just doesn't want to raise it. He doesn't want to raise it.
And the issue of religious liberty, quickly, for the Catholic leadership?
That's something President Obama stressed in his video this week. He said, "I'm firmly committed to religious liberty and always will be." That's an issue that some Catholics, particularly in the hierarchy, had been challenging him on. Again, it doesn't seem to be hitting the grassroots right now.
Kim Lawton, many thanks. Amid all the faith-based mobilizing, there are boundaries for many religious organizations. In return for being tax-exempt, churches and charities are required to stay out of politics. No endorsements, no taxes. Some pastors, not all, think any limits on what they can say are unconstitutional, and they're organizing a kind of preach-in to emphasize their freedom. But, as Lucky Severson reports, the IRS may not even be listening.
You are on board the USS Focal Point. It is our patrol boat. This is not a pleasure cruise. This is a patrol boat in which we patrol the choppy waters of America's public life, looking for the intersection of truth and politics.
Brian Fisher's program is on 125 radio stations and on television in three states. To say he represents the far right of the Christian right is probably not saying enough. But because he works for the American Family Association, a nonprofit organization, he has to be careful not to endorse or oppose a political candidate, although he's been known to push that line as far as he can.
We have a lawless president. This guy, ladies and gentlemen, he reminds me of a juvenile delinquent, is really what he reminds me of. He's like a street thug.
Fisher, a former pastor, has strong views on just about everything, especially the nonprofit statute known as 501c3 of the IRS tax code that exempts churches from income and property taxes and prohibits opposing or recommending political candidates.
It's been said of you that you push the limit as far as you can, that you won't say, go vote against Obama, but you come as close as you can.
Well, I'm just observing the bright line that the IRS has established. This is what the IRS has said. That's the bright line, and I observe that line.
Do you think that line is unfair?
Absolutely, and it's completely unconstitutional.
That view is shared by an increasing number of pastors around the country who are joining an effort called Pulpit Freedom Sunday to challenge the IRS. Pastor Jim Garlow of the Skyline Wesleyan Megachurch in La Mesa, California, is one of the movement's leaders.
We believe that there should be no governmental intrusion in the pulpit at all. A pastor should be, if he wants to endorse or oppose a candidate, and that should be the right of the pastor based upon the First Amendment, freedom of speech and freedom of religion, no governmental intrusion into the pulpit.
He says there may be as many as 2,000 pastors joining Pulpit Freedom Sunday this year, deliberately flaunting 501c3 by endorsing candidates from the pulpit. It's not illegal, but it could result in their loss of their tax breaks. Some pastors will send DVDs of their sermons to the IRS. But Pastor Brian Collier of the United Methodist Church in Tupelo, Mississippi, with a congregation of about 2,500, won't be joining in.
It's not something we're going to do, not going to participate in. We're called as the community of faith to do what we're supposed to do. And I think the status that has been afforded to us by the government is a nice bonus. But status or no status, it doesn't change what our mission is.
I think it has had an alarming impact on the American pulpit. I think pastors have shied away. Pastors have been hesitant. Pastors aren't sure where the line is. Pastors have been intimidated.
We've never really looked over our shoulder here and said we can't do or we shouldn't do this or advance that program based on some status that's assigned to us.
Pastor Jeffrey Daniel of the White Hill Missionary Baptist Church in Tupelo doesn't endorse candidates, but he does seem to be looking over his shoulder.
I know there are some that feel a little bit bolder and will get more into actually saying we need to get behind these individuals. But I believe there are other ways to do that without creating such big problems for the church.
Pastor James Hole of the Mount Hope Missionary Baptist Church in Taylor, Mississippi, says contrary to popular misconception, black churches that he knows of do not endorse political candidates.
Probably the greatest politically oriented or inclined preacher in the history of this country, which was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., it is a misnomer to say that black churches have endorsed political candidates. Black churches have endorsed political movements.
We're people of influence, and that's a lot of weight to carry, and to just come out and say, hey, we need to get behind this guy. I don't think that's our job. What I think we're supposed to do is inform them about, you know, making sure that they do vote and that they understand what's at stake.
What I will do on Pulpit Freedom Sunday is simply to outline what are some of the key biblical issues in this year's election. And then who are some of the candidates in opposition to biblical truth? Who are some of the candidates running that are in support of biblical truth? As a follower of Jesus Christ, I want to encourage people to vote for people who would follow biblical truth.
Do you have any idea how many churches have been audited, how many churches have lost their nonprofit status?
There's not a single church that's lost its nonprofit status in 58 years.
In fact, at least one church briefly lost its nonprofit status in 1992 in Binghamton, New York, after the church purchased a full-page newspaper ad opposing presidential nominee Bill Clinton. It's difficult to know the status of these audits because the IRS doesn't disclose them, but in the vast majority of cases, the agency simply issues a warning. So then, why is Pulpit Freedom Sunday necessary?
Because an unjust law is still on the books. It is unconstitutional, many believe. And if it's unconstitutional and that law stands, it needs to be removed.
Marcus Owens worked for the IRS for 25 years. He was the head of the Exempt Organization Division. Owens says many people don't understand that the 501c3 law was created by Congress, not the IRS.
So the Congress has on at least two occasions subsequent to the enactment in 1954 of the original prohibition, reaffirmed and increased the penalty on intervention in political campaigns.
So if these pastors got a gripe, they should take it to their congressman or congresswoman.
That's how one changes the law in the democracy, yes.
It turns out the most likely outcome for the Pulpit Freedom Sunday movement may be only the national attention it gets. That's because the law requires that an IRS regional commissioner authorize any church audits. Since the agency reorganized a few years ago, there are no longer regional commissioners, so there's no one to authorize an audit. And there won't be until Congress rewrites the law.
That effectively shut down every IRS church investigation other than criminal investigations. So the efforts by Pulpit Freedom Sunday to goad the IRS into an audit of churches simply will not occur.
The movement at this point may be more symbolic than anything, but that doesn't diminish the conviction of those like Brian Fisher, who see the law as an attack on their freedom of religion and speech.
There would be no United States of America if America's pastors had not had the freedom from their pulpits to declare the truth as they saw it. So I think a key part of reclaiming America's future is to turn our pastors loose so they're able to declare without any hesitation, boldly as they are prompted to do, the values that they find in the scriptures.
Pastor Hole thinks Pulpit Freedom Sunday is a bad idea and that it will do more to divide the country than to bring it together.
This Pulpit Sunday, it's being couched in fear about what they're taking away from us, that somehow or other there's this big boogeyman who's trying to take away the country from whom? Whose country is it?
Pulpit Freedom Sunday is scheduled to take place October 7th. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Tupelo, Mississippi.
We have a happy story today about the settlement of Vietnamese Catholic priests and seminarians in Carthage in rural southwest Missouri. Every year, the priests there invite Vietnamese from all over the U.S. to come for 4 days of reunions, retreats, and celebrations. And do they come? This summer, as Judy Valente reports, more than 50,000 Vietnamese Americans converged on Carthage to see each other and give thanks for their new lives.
Ave Maria. Father Basil Don is the pastor of two Catholic churches in this rural stretch of western Missouri. Several times a week, he makes the 50-mile round trip between his parishes along these quiet country roads.
No traffic. They're peaceful, yeah.
To keep himself alert, he sometimes sings in his native language, Vietnamese. Foreign-born priests are becoming a familiar presence in many rural communities, and increasingly, those priests are Vietnamese. Father Basil's order, the Congregation of the Mother Co-Redemptrix, has 500 seminarians in Ho Chi Minh City, the kind of numbers American orders haven't seen since the 1950s. Seminaries and convents there can't accommodate all of the men and women who want to enter religious life, so many end up here, in America. Carthage, Missouri, a small, largely Protestant town, may seem like an unlikely site for the order's U.S. headquarters. The Vietnamese priests moved here beginning in the mid-1970s because an American religious order was moving out due to declining numbers. At the time, Catholics were under threat in Vietnam, and priests had to go into hiding or flee. But somehow, this congregation managed to survive.
We were born in 1952. So fairly young, and we're proud to say our founder is a Vietnamese priest. You know how most religious community enter into Vietnam from other country, but we proudly say we are the one that founded by a Vietnamese priest for the Vietnamese people.
In recent years, as Vietnam is open to the West, Vietnamese Catholics have regained a measure of religious freedom. Even so, the government still restricts church activities, and in some areas, Catholics are barred from holding government jobs, which helps explain the deep devotion of Vietnamese Catholics living in the United States. Thousands journey to Carthage each year for the Marian Days Festival, a four-day pilgrimage to give thanks to the Virgin Mary for the safety and freedom they feel they enjoy in America.
It's like a divine providence. We happen to be right in the middle of the United States. Everybody can come over here, you know, just to the whole family gathering. But second part is the spiritual side of things, because through the year, all this hardship working, and just a week to come here just to pray and listen to conference to nourish their spiritual side.
About 500 people came in 1978, the first year of the festival. Today, between 50 and 60,000 people attend, making it one of the largest ethnic festivals in the U.S. The centerpiece of the pilgrimage is this statue of the Virgin Mary, one of only six like it in the world. Vietnamese mothers usually take the lead in passing on the faith, and this is translated into a deep devotion within the community to the Blessed Mother. Sister Maria Nguyen, a Benedictine sister from Kansas, says many families also credit Mary with helping them escape communism.
They thank that for all things that Mary and God have been done for them for the past year. And then they asked Mary that continue to journey to be with them for this coming year, for the future.
The Marian Days Festival allows Vietnamese priests and sisters serving in America to reconnect with their culture. Asians and Asian Americans make up only 4% of the American Catholic Church, but account for 10% of vocations, most of those Vietnamese, leading one observer to call Vietnamese priests the new Irish. Father Basil's story is typical. He says he first began thinking about the priesthood while serving in the South Vietnamese Army.
When I was in the Army, I felt that I'm going to die. And then in my heart, I just you know, maybe the God's Holy Spirit inspired me, and I just raise up my heart, my mind to God, and I pray. I pray, and then God protect me, and I escape from mine explosion. I heard the explosion, and I fell down, and I didn't get any injury. My friend behind me got hit, and the other one got hit too. I think that's a sign of God's providence. He wanted me to be a future priest. He protect me from harm.
Father Basil remained in Vietnam for 4 years after the fall of Saigon, trying to keep out of the eye of communist officials.
Some people that say that you're a very good person. Maybe you can become, a priest. But in that time, in communist rule, nobody had to fulfill that dream.
This is the first time Father Basil has been in charge of predominantly American parishes, ones where most of the members are farmers or retirees. He says he has struggled mightily to improve his English.
My first 2 years, I feel lonely because I don't understand English much. But now, after 4 years, I understand English more, and people know me more, understand me more, and I express English easier. One person said, you know, Father, maybe you can speak Vietnamese with an American accent.
The parish bookkeeper, Susan Costello, helps correct his grammar when he writes his Sunday homilies, and parish council members presented him with a ping pong table so he could take up a pastime many Americans enjoy.
His speech when he first got here wasn't really good, but every week he gets better until he gets excited and then he talks too fast, but we just love him. And he's always happy and smiling until he gets up on that altar, and then he's all business.
Without Father Basil, parishioners say they would probably see a priest only once a week for Mass on Sundays and would have to wait longer to schedule baptisms, funerals, and marriages. As it is, Father Basil is on call 24 hours a day for the people at both his parishes. What are the challenges that you've faced in terms of your parishioners?
First of all, because I'm not an American pastor, I'm Asian pastor. They have to train their ear to understand my accent. I asked one of them, do you accept me because I'm a Vietnamese, different from your culture? He said, I accept you because you're a priest. We need priests, no matter the nationality. The United States, they need a priest, but good priest. So because I have background of my faith, and my experience about my faith, so I can share with them, and they share their faith with me too.
But preserving religious traditions from Vietnam is also important to these first and second generation immigrants. The Marian Days Festival draws thousands of teens. This drum group traveled to Carthage from San Jose, California. Many youngsters accompany their grandparents, though they admit they are more likely to speak to them in English than Vietnamese.
Like the environment, like being all together, getting to praise God as a group, especially uniting with other Vietnamese people, because I know a lot of times, you know, people don't, they lose their culture and they don't join together.
The priests in Carthage worry that the rate of vocations eventually will decline among Vietnamese families, as it has among Americans. Boys used to enroll in the seminary here during high school. That's no longer the case, and it's becoming more difficult to attract college-age men.
Last year I didn't get any, but this year I'm blessed enough to have five, so it's just give and take.
Still, the congregation currently has 150 men in the U.S. studying to be priests or brothers, a number that would thrill any other seminary. Father Tran says he hopes the example of men like Father Basil, who seem to thrive as priests, will inspire other young people to try religious life.
I live in wartime, you know, in my country. Here, I feel peace in my heart, my mind.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Judy Valente in Carthage, Missouri.
On our calendar this week, Jews observe Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement, the most solemn day of the Jewish calendar. Observant Jews spend the day in synagogue, praying, fasting, and repenting. Finally, in France, the Louvre Museum opened a new wing this weekend devoted to Islamic art. The galleries cost more than $130 million and took a decade to complete. Works from the 7th century through the 19th century are on display. Museum officials say the new wing is meant to promote cross-cultural understanding. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on smartphones. There's always much more on our website as well. You can comment on all our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from Pope Benedict XVI's recent trip to Lebanon. Amid the violent protests in the Muslim world, the Pope spoke of the need to protect religious freedom and for all faiths to work together to promote peace.